Got to be on my best behavior this morning. My sister's here. Oh, do I love you? That's for sure. You can be sure of that. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 1 to 12. Christian leadership at its best. Number one, character. Number two, care. Number three, commitment. This week I read these two quotes. It goes like this: gossips are worse than thieves because they steal another person's dignity, honest reputation, and credibility, which are impossible to restore. So remember this. When your feet slip, you can always recover your balance. But when your tongue slips, you cannot recover your words. Then I read this Chinese proverb: slander cannot destroy an honest man. When the flood recedes, the rock is still there. Winston Churchill, you know, this great British statesman, this British bulldog, known for his oratory, known for his intensity, "We will never, 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 never surrender," was also a man with such a tender heart that on 50 occasions at least in public, this is not in private, in private he wrestled with what he called the black dog and often suffered with bouts of depression. But even in public, on over 50 occasions, wept openly. In fact, blubbered, he would go to scenes where bombs had fallen and people were killed. And the people would know that this British bulldog had a tender heart. He would cry. So much so that people would say, "Winston Churchill loves the British people like a father and a mother loves their children." Today we come to 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, and we find that the Apostle Paul, this genius, this man of intellect, this great apostle of the Gentiles, this church planter, this man who could take on anyone intellectually, was also a man who reveals his heart, a heart of tenderness and a heart of real affection. I remind you that the background to this passage is the Apostle Paul and Silas and Timothy coming to Thessalonica. Remember, they go into the synagogue, they preach the gospel, lots of Jewish men and women are converted, and then lots of pagan Gentiles are converted, then lots of women are converted, a church grows, but then what happens is some rabble-rousers, a mob, begin to make havoc, and the hostility is so fierce that they are arrested, they are accused, and the Apostle Paul has to flee the city. He'd already been to Philippi, where he'd been in stocks and in bonds. He'd been beaten and flogged. Now he has to escape from Thessalonica, and he's writing from Corinth back to the church. And what was happening was that gossips and slanderers were telling lies about the Apostle Paul. They were saying to these new Christians at Thessalonica, "You don't want to be listening to him. You don't want to be bothered with him. This man Paul and his team, they're cowards. They're charlatans. They're lazy, money-grabbing thieves. They're hustlers. They're manipulators. They're authoritarian bullies who want you to do what they say, not what they do. Don't you know this Paul? He's a glory seeker. He's an empire builder. He's a con man. He's a phony. I mean, where is he? He ran away when the pressure was on." All of which was not the truth at all. And the Apostle Paul now comes to address some of these issues in such a personal way that he reveals the sort of man that he was, a man of steel and a man of velvet, capable but vulnerable. Look how it begins. It begins by talking about his character. Character is vitally important in a Christian leader. He says, "For you yourselves know, brothers," and that brothers means brothers and sisters, "that our coming to you was not in vain." These slanderers are saying it was a waste of time, Paul coming here. He just ran away when the pressure was on. Nothing good can come from his ministry. "No," says the apostle, "our coming to you was not something in vain. It wasn't a waste of time. But though we had already suffered and been shamefully treated at Philippi, as you know, we had boldness in our God to declare to you the gospel of God in the midst of much conflict." Now, when someone's under pressure and being slandered, there's no better way than to ask people who know differently to stand up and bear witness. Isn't that right? Look how many times, verse 1, verse 2, verse 5, verse 9, verse 10, verse 11, the Apostle Paul says to these Christians in Thessalonica, "You know," verse 1, "as you know," verse 2, "as you know," verse 5, "as for you remember," verse 9, verse 10, "you are witnesses," verse 11, "for you know what we were like." You know exactly what we were like, and you know that these false accusations are just that. They are false, slanderous, gossiping, wrong accusations. Now look at the character which is revealed. Trait number one, tenacity. Look what it says. "As you know, we were being shamefully treated at Philippi." Here's the Apostle Paul. He'd gone to Philippi first. Remember what had happened? He planted a church there. Remember what happened? He was arrested. He was thrown into jail. He'd been whipped and flogged. He was there in chains. You remember how we were beaten? How we were bruised? How we were in bonds in Philippi? And the same happened there in Thessalonica. There was a riot. And his life was in danger. And yet he had the tenacity to stay in those places and to preach the gospel of God with boldness in the midst of such conflict. He wasn't a coward. He had bravery and courage and tenacity. And if you don't believe me, just turn back the pages to 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and listen to these words. Paul writes to the Corinthians, he says, "We had far greater labors, far more imprisonments, with countless beatings, often near dead. 5 times we received 39 lashes, 3 times beaten with rods, once I was stoned, 3 times I was shipwrecked, a night and a day I was adrift in the sea, I was on frequent journeys, in dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my own people, dangers from the Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness, dangers at sea, dangers from false brothers, in toil and hardship, through many a sleepless night, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure." And apart from these things, the burden, and the worry, and the anxiety of all the churches. He was tenacious. His character had tenacity. His character had integrity. Verse 3, "For our appeal does not spring from error or impurity or any attempt to deceive. But just as we've been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak not to please man, but to please God who tests our hearts." You see, integrity is being willing to live above the integrity line, not on it, not below it, but above it. So you have nothing to hide. And you have nothing to fear. And you have nothing to prove. He says, listen, you know when we were among you, I didn't appeal to you springing from error or impurity or an attempt to deceive. I wasn't trying to deceive you. I wasn't trying to con you. No, no. My life was marked with integrity, not with impurity, not with error, not with deception, but with truthfulness and openness and godliness. Integrity. Trait number three, accountability. Look what it says. But just as we've been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak not to please man, but to please God who tests our hearts. I didn't come to you as a man pleaser. I didn't come to you tickling your fancy. I didn't come to you just telling stories. I didn't come to you as someone who wanted praise. No, 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 no. I was not a man pleaser. I was approved of God. I was entrusted as a steward of the gospel. I was living, I was breathing to an audience of one. Those of you who've heard Sarah Groves sing that song, which is very, very, very penetrating to our minds and hearts. I will make this journey alone. I will live, I will breathe to an audience of one. My sister sitting at the back. Every Wednesday was Balayan Day. We had no money. My mother would send me across the road to a lady called Auntie Girly, who wasn't me auntie. I was terrified at her times because when you walked in, there was this picture of Jesus looking at you. But on the wall was these words. Christ is the head of this house, the unseen guest at every meal, the silent listener to every conversation. And Paul is saying here, I was accountable to God. I was living my life in His presence, wanting to please Him, entrusted as a steward with His gospel to preach and proclaim. And not, what's more, I wasn't there trying to please men, but to please God who tests our hearts. Wow. It's one thing for someone to say, come into my home, have a word with my wife, have a chat with my kids, see what you really like. It's another thing to say of the Holy One, of the one who sees all things, who knows all things, who is everywhere present, who knows the secrets of all of our hearts. It's something different, isn't it, to say, I was accountable to Him who tests our hearts. Wow. Accountable. And not just accountability, but transparency. Look what it says. For we never came with words of flattery, as you know, nor with a pretext for greed. God is witness. And if you go down to verse 9, for you remember, brothers, our labor and toil. We worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you while we proclaim to you the gospel of God. He was a man whose life was an open book. He said, I didn't come to flatter you, nor did I come for your money. In fact, I was laboring day and night so I might not be a burden to you. You remember that the Apostle Paul was a tent maker. You remember he would sew his tents together and he would pray for people. And there in the marketplace, when people would walk up to him, he would share the gospel with them. And then he would go into the synagogue. And then he would go to other places, in other homes, and share the gospel. No, no, I was transparent. I didn't want your money. I didn't want your flattery. I wasn't a trickster. I wasn't a glory seeker. I wasn't a con man. There was a transparency. What you see is what you get. Transparent in his life, transparent in his business, transparent in his finances. Not only so, humility. Look what it says, verse 6. Nor did we seek glory from people, whether from you or from others, though we could have made demands as apostles of Christ. I wasn't coming looking for reputation. I didn't want a pat on the back. I didn't want my name up in lights. I wasn't seeking a reputation. Watch out for Christian leaders who want a reputation. Jesus made himself of no reputation. Took upon himself the form of a servant. Came in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death. The Apostle Peter said, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that in due time he might lift you up. No, I wasn't coming for fame. I wasn't coming for your applause. I wasn't coming so that I could be popular. I wasn't seeking glory. No, no. Not from people or from others. And nor did I make any demands. Even though as an apostle, I could have made demands, I did not. Remember, in the Old Testament, the prophet Micah made it plain, didn't he? God speaking through him, he has shown you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? To do justly, to love mercy, to walk humbly with your God. In other words, honesty, humanity, and humility are the marks of those who walk with God. And humility was the mark of the Apostle Paul. And not only so, but purity. Look at verse 10. You are witnesses, and God also, how holy and righteous and blameless was our conduct toward you believers. Wow. That's a statement, isn't it? You know, the Apostle Paul also said, hey, friends, the good that I would do, I don't do. Those things I don't want to do, I do do. Oh, wretched man that I am, who's going to deliver me from this body of death? It was the same Apostle Paul who wrote to Timothy and said, I am the chief of sinners. If you want to find the worst sinner on the planet, here am I. But I've been saved by the grace of God, and by the grace of God, I am what I am. And God's grace had worked in his life so much so that his life was so transformed that he could say, I desire holiness and righteousness. I seek to live a life that's blameless, above the integrity line. So no one can come to me and make an accusation and say, you stole this. You're a liar here. You've been sleeping with this person. You're a cheat. No, no. I sought to be holy and righteous and blameless. And not only so, you are the witnesses of this. Character. This man of steel and velvet was a man of character. Number two. Care. How important in Christian leadership is care? Look at verse 7. But we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you have become very dear to us. And look at verse 11, for you know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. Gentleness, tenderness, affection, an example of good fatherhood, sacrifice, laying down his life, intimacy. You are very, very dear to us. Now, we had a mother who died in her 40s. She was ill from when I was 7. She had leukemia. She went from being a large woman to being a skeleton. She didn't live in an easy house, nor with an easy man. nor with lots of money. But I tell you this, she loved her children. My sister and I were just talking about it just the other day. My sister said she had a dream about my mum in the middle of the night. That's how tender she was. That's how real she was. Tough as nails, but boy, did she love her kids. You know that we had, I hope you don't mind me saying this, Ellie, if you're here. Forgive me, please. But you know we had the dedication the other week of Reuben. We were talking about Reuben's birthday, which happens to be on Christmas Day. And we were wondering whether all the family would be all scattered all over the place visiting different in-laws and would miss Reuben's birthday. And Ellie began to cry. Because such is the strength and depth of the bond that there is between a mother and her children. And listen, you watch a mother breastfeeding or you watch a mother giving a bottle, look how close, look how intimate, look how tender, look how precious that relationship is. Paul says, I was like a mother. This is the Apostle Paul. Talk about cerebral. Talk about an intellect. Talk about a genius. Talk about someone who could be considered aloof. He says, I was like a mother, like a tender mother. Gentle, like a nursing mother, with such care. And not only so, I was like a father, he says. You know, like a father with his children. You know, I've got dads here who bring their kids on their own. They care for their kids. They would die for their kids. Oh, yes, we know as dads, we sometimes have to administer discipline and shout at them, but I tell you what, do we love our kids, men? Do we? Pardon? I should hope so too. I was like a mom. I was like a dad. I'd do anything. I would exhort them, instruct them, charge them, love them, protect them. Amazing, this care. And look at this care showing itself in sacrifice. We were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also, verse 8, our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. Do you know what it said of Jesus? Jesus, the good shepherd, the good pastor, he laid down his life for the sheep. Paul was willing to lay down his life. Those who are in Christian leadership, who take it seriously, who want to know the way and go the way and show the way, will lay down their lives and make sacrifice after sacrifice for the cause of Christ and for the men and women over whom God, in his grace, has set them as shepherds and overseers to the flock of God. You know, as a boy, I learned a song. My mother couldn't sing for toffee, but nevertheless, she should sing this song. I would like to tell you what I think of Jesus. Since I found in him a friend so strong and true, I would tell you how he changed my life completely. He did something that no other friend could do. No one ever cared for me like Jesus. There's no other friend so kind as he. No one else could take the sin and darkness from me. Oh, how much he cared for me. Listen to me. Whoever you are, perhaps you're sitting there, you live on your own. Perhaps you're sitting there and you think, no one really cares for me. You're wrong. Jesus Christ, the Son of God, the King of kings, the Lord of lords, the lover of your soul, desperately, desperately cares for you. Cares for you so much, he laid down his life upon the cross. He rose again that you could be justified. He sends his Spirit into the world. He's willing to call you from darkness to light, from the kingdom of Satan unto God, from the broad way to the narrow way, from earth to heaven, by his grace. And he will care for your soul in life. He will care for your soul in death. He will care for your soul in eternity. And anyone who would aspire to be a Christian leader must want to care with gentleness, tenderness, affection, example, sacrifice, and intimacy for the flock of God. Number three, commitment. Verse 12. We exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. Do you want to know what the commitment of the apostle was? He was committed to bringing the gospel to lost men and women, to all sorts of shapes and sizes, all sorts of backgrounds and upbringings, all sorts of experiences, different creeds, different colors, different race. He would come and he would bring the everlasting gospel, the gospel of God. Tell them the good news. And then he would be committed to making disciples of our Lord Jesus Christ, who would then walk in a manner worthy of God. So much so that when he wrote to the Ephesians, that's exactly what he said. I want you to walk in a manner worthy of God. I want your life to be so transformed that people will say of you, this man, this woman is walking away in a way which pleases God. This man, this woman is walking in a way which brings glory and honor to God. This man, this woman definitely belongs in the kingdom of our Lord Jesus Christ. There's no doubt about it. You can tell not by their words, but by their walk. Not just by their beliefs, but by their behavior. Not just by the creed they can recite, but by their conduct. And the apostle was committed to bringing a gospel which would transform their lives, save them, not just for the years of time alone, but for eternity, and in this life, change them and transform them into men and women walking the walk, living the life. Wow. Take these lessons home with you. Lesson number one. Godliness is everything. If you aspire to be a Christian leader, if you are a Christian, you should be wanting to be like Jesus. Lord, make me like Jesus. Number two, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. How true is that? If you aspire to be a Christian leader, you can't be just at tongue's end. You've got to love people at hands and feet and heart and home's end, and be known as a man or a woman who really, genuinely, lovingly cares for people. Don't you think that's important? I read a story this week about a forest fire. And as the firemen are going through, after they put the forest fire out, they saw a nest. And there was a charcoal hen sitting in this nest. And the sort of fireman sort of kicked it away. As he kicked this charcoal skeleton away, out ran the little chicks. She'd sat there in the midst of the fire, protecting her chicks, laying down her life. Wow. Let's have leaders like that. You never shut the door on people when they come to you. Never. You open up your home. In a busy life, you try to make time. You remember God has given you two ears and one mouth so you can listen twice as much as you speak. And you care for the flock of God. And let's remember this. The whole end of our commitment to Christ is to seek to promote his gospel and to make disciples who are walking worthy. Isn't that true? Some of us remember singing, men will look at the life I lead, see the side I take and the things I love. They judge my Lord by my every deed. Lord, set my affections on things above. They're watching you, marking all you do, hearing the things you say. Let them see the Savior as he shines in you. Let his power control you every day, so that you walk worthy. How important is that? And then, of course, who is sufficient for these things? Who is? Who's sufficient for these things? I'm not. You're not. But we're in good company, aren't we? Yes, Abraham told lies. He was the friend of God. He forgave him and changed him. That's good, isn't it? Jacob was a cheat. But God made him into a prince and changed his life. David was an adulterer. But the Lord forgave him. Made him a man after God's own heart. Isn't that great? Isn't it? Jonah was a coward. He ran the opposite way. But God forgave him and used him mightily. Peter denied the Lord and lied. But the Lord changed his life. The Apostle Paul said, I'm the chief of sinners. But he still used him. He still used him. And maybe you and I could sing this song we're going to close with. Oh, let me see your footmarks and in them plant mine own. Oh, let me hear you speaking in accents clear and still above the storms of passion, the murmurs of self-will. Because Jesus, as weak as we are, we have promised, and with your grace, we will serve you to the end. Let's stand and sing.